Oh, shalom, everybody. Ooh, I am here to tell you whoop-dee-doo. And it is not just because I am so happy. It's because I'm talking to someone who was in a show called Whoop-dee-doo. He was also in another delightful show called When Pigs Fly. And now he is going to be emceeing a cabaret kind of show at the Metropolitan Room. It's the 6th annual Metro Star Talent Challenge. I have no idea what the hell that is, but I'm sure that Jay Rogers is going to tell us. Yes, Jay Rogers, the actor, the delightful person from Off and Off of Broadway. Jay, shalom, damn it. Welcome to the neighborhood.
Thank you, Rabbi Saul. How are you today?
Oh, I'm Jewish. That's how I am.
Awesome.
Can I ask, are you Jewish?
Mr. Rogers, but this ain't my neighborhood.
That's right. It's not necessarily a beautiful day when you're Jewish. And I don't like watching fish. I like eating fish. So it's a very different sort of a thing. Can I ask, are you Jewish, Jay Rogers?
Only by association. No, I'm not.
Hey. Dave, why did you make me do this interview? I'm sorry. Okay, I'll get through it anyway. But because you're in the theater, sorry?
I don't have my copy of The Joy of Yiddish with me. That's back in my apartment in Brooklyn. But, you know, I can keep up, so you'd be surprised.
Well, that's the thing. You've been in the theater for 25, 30 years or more.
That's
you
right.
Should know. You're by extension. You know, or if you've had your extension snipped by a rabbi, you're also kind of Jewish there. So let's get the current thing out of the way first. Starting on Monday, July 8th, you will be hosting, you will be emceeing something called the Metro Star Talent Challenge. Please tell us what this is.
Well, it's the 6th annual one. It's gone with great guns so far. In the past, I've judged it. There is a panel of judge and also audience involvement that helps pick the winner of the Metro Star Challenge, not competition.
Whoops. Sorry, challenge. What's the difference between a challenge and a competition?
You know, they sound both equally challenging and competitive to me, but I can't say.
So you would be a good Talmudist right there. You're balancing the language. So is it kind of like the American Idol? Is it like The Voice, all those shows on TV?
It is kind of like that, of course, on a bit of a smaller scale. But it starts off with many contestants, and over the 7-week period, or whittle down, of course, to the winner, who receives a really cool, as they say, career-boosting package of prizes, a recording of their show live at the Metropolitan Room, which is produced by the Metro Star Competition. So you come out smelling like a rose. The last few winners have included Anne Steele, the delicious T. Oliver Reed, who just was lauded in the Times by Stephen Holden for his participation in the Bobby Short they did at the Rose Room. Marissa Mulder and Billy Rowe is the current Metro Star. She's fantastic. Just did a great, both of them actually did a Tom Waits show, not together, separately. But terrific singers, great presentation. It's not so much about that sound you hear on, say, American Idol with all the pyrotechnics and the, you know, it's more about really getting into the tune, singing the melody, and telling the story. And, voted on by, as I said, the audience participation, and there's a panel of judges, which include actor, singer, director Eric Michael Gillette, a good friend of mine, cabaret writer Roy Sander, who is
I know Roy Sander. He's been writing about cabaret for 4 years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The writer Rob Lister, and this year they're adding a good friend of mine also, Carolyn Montgomery Farrand, who is a delicious singer and raconteur, yes. And I think it's going to be a swell affair.
And it runs for something like several weeks until they have the actual winner. What, do they narrow it down each week? Somebody goes away, kind of like the Idol thing?
That's right. So by the end, there's only, I think, four competitors or challengers, as it were. And then they pick from them.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Sounds really exciting. And you get to MC. Have you done a lot of that kind of... I know you've done a lot of cabaret shows, but have you hosted? Have you MC'd a lot of things?
I have hosted a lot of stuff. And I'm currently at the University of Connecticut doing a production of The Drowsy Chaperone, which happens to star the Wheel of Fortune star, Pat Safe. Lifetime Achievement Award from the Emmys for being a fantastic host, and you have to admit he's wonderful. I'd ask him for some tips, and he said, you know, comics and comic actors don't usually make great MCs or hosts because they're always about me, 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 look at me, I'm a comic, I'm an actor, you know. He said the best thing, the easiest and best thing to do is sort of step aside and let things unfold and just keep them going. And you know what? I think that's wise advice, and I'm going to use it. Keep my mouth shut unless I have to.
And let me ask, when you asked Mr. Sajak for advice, did you buy a vowel? I've always wanted to buy it.
I asked for an E, he gave me a Y. What can I say?
What can I tell you? Well, dang, my goodness, because I knew Pat Sajak was doing like The Odd Couple a year or two ago, and now he's doing, wow, at the University of Connecticut. Is that, what school is this that's doing this?
The University of Connecticut, and here is where Connecticut Repertory Theater is based. This is their summer series called The Nutmeg Summer Series, and they're producing this show, and shortly after this closes, then Forum will open, and then Music Man. So,
are you in all of them, or just this one?
No, I just brought in to do the role of Underling, the butler,
Rousey
Chaperone, who gets, I am the recipient of many spit takes from a wonderful actress named Jan Newberger, who folks may remember from the Broadway Man. She did Gypsy with Angela Lansbury. And she's had a wonderful career and is a wonderful, wonderful comic actress. And we seem to feel like we've been working together for years.
I remember I did the community theater production of The Drowsy Chaperone, and it was in that very scene, and we were using borscht, because it was at a shul. And, my dry-cleaning bills, if I tell you. So, this leads to the question, because you have been acting for many, many years, and you've been off-Broadway, and you were even on Broadway for a night. We'll get to that. But how are you able to act and do what you do full-time? Can you make a living in the theater, just in the theater, in New York?
Yes, me personally, not just me, but I have lots of friends who that's all they do and have marvelously long careers, go from show to show to show. They're very talented, they're very dedicated, they're committed, once again, talented at the top of the list. I've had a pretty good luck, but not that I didn't have to do other things on the side. But I attended bar since I was 18, so I've attended bar for a long time in my life just to supplement my income. Now I don't do that anymore. I teach, I host, they pay you to host these days, and I do a little acting and singing whenever I have to.
Well, no, that's wonderful, because I remember Dave, the host of this radio show, telling me that he saw you off-Broadway, saw you either in Whoop-Dee-Doo or, or When Pigs Fly. And then he was over at, like, Don't Tell Mama or something, and suddenly you were serving drinks. And it was like this weird disconnect. There's a wait a minute, I just saw this person on stage. What are you doing making a gimlet?
Well, I make a fine gimlet. But, when you work off-Broadway, it's not a huge salary. And you just supplement. And plus, I have to admit, Rabbi, that I actually enjoy tending bar. It's a great way to meet people. It's a great way to watch people get crazy drunk. It's a great way to have a cocktail while you're working. So these are three things why I like tending bar.
But when was the last time you did it?
Oh, gosh, professionally, about 4 years ago, I stopped doing it.
Oh, only 4 years ago. I mean, that's still fairly recent, considering that you started in the early 1980s. So, my gosh, it took a lot of years.
A lot of years slinging cocktails. But I worked at Don't Tell Mama off and on for about 20 years. And then I worked at another club that is no longer with us called 88, which was a great club down in the village.
Hey, 88 right. Is gone now. That's right.
Remember that? You remember that nice club? And that's where I got great exposure to many, many shows, cabaret shows, many great stars, small and intimate rooms. And it just seemed to serve my interest in that particular genre of cabaret.
And how did you get your start as a performer?
Well, I got a degree from a little tiny college in Mississippi. That's where I'm from. And promptly left as quickly as I could. I got a job with a children's theater company I toured with for 5 years. until they decided they wanted to leave that behind and write a Broadway musicale.
Oh.
They did. And we toured it around the South before we brought it up to New York. It was called Cleavage.
Now, wait a minute. This was a children's theater group.
No, yeah, that decided that they weren't, you know, doing the kids thing anymore.
Obviously not.
Right. And it was sort of a 9-person review-ish kind of show with sketches and songs. And it was not received well, as you might know, because we closed the same night we opened. I believe it was Clive Barnes who said it was the worst thing to come out of the South since the yellow fever epidemic.
Oh, now, wait a minute. But there's somewhere on either your Wikipedia or one of the pages when they talk about that show that the day after it closed, the New York Times review came out, and it was positive.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I mean, it may have been badly received. I think Barnes was at the Post by then. But were the other reviews good?
No.
Oh. Well, what do you remember about that show? We don't have a cast recording or anything like that to share. Do you remember? What do you remember about it?
Well, you know what? The journey to there, the trip to the getting to Broadway was very exciting. Most of us had only visited New York. None of us lived here. We were all cast out of the South, except for the two ingenues. But then what happened was we wound up in New York with an equity card because you had to have an equity card on the Broadway.
Yeah.
Then the company, couldn't produce the show, and we couldn't work for the theater anymore because it was an equity theater. So we stayed right here in New York, and some of us have made a nice life here. So.
Well, mazel. I was also trying to remember to see if you recall any of like the songs in the show included. One song that you sang called Sawing a Couple in Half. Do you remember anything about that song?
I do, very much, because I was actually portraying Groucho Marx's duck. Remember the duck with the
yes,
bird that he dropped down? That was my part, as a shyster lawyer, as they say. And it was a sawing a couple in half. It's always good for a laugh. It was fun, and at the time,
Yes?
I guess not so funny.
We're talking with a very funny Jay Rogers. Now, another song in that show, Cleavage, back from 1982, was called Boys Will Be Girls. I can kind of imagine what that had to do with, but you said you came from the South, and considering the fact that I'm assuming that you are a gay person, was that difficult? Was it difficult growing up and growing gay?
Yes, you know what? It didn't make any difference to me. People sort of, you know, in the South, there's that old saying, he's a little funny, but he's nice. And somehow I managed to get through without being scarred or beat up or hurt in any way. And I was surrounded by a loving family. And even though it was the 70s and a rough time to be from Mississippi, I managed to get through it quite well. And, of course, I ran screaming as soon as I could, and that's how I got to New York and through Cleavage, you see. And that Boys Will Be Girls number, well, it was the first time I ever wore a dress in public, and it led to wearing many other dresses. But the number was pretty fun. Let's see. You know that Idi Amin was just an African queen with a line.
Okay.
I saw the KKK in sheets of pink lamé, because boys will be girls. It was, topical at the time. So.
Yeah, no, it actually sounds like a funny, cute review. No better or worse than a lot of the other kinds of reviews of that ilk. It's just sort of a shame that it's disappeared into history, and we don't really have a record, unless you have some sort of soundboard recording squirreled away in your, I was going to say in your closet, but somewhere in your home.
There is a cast album. There weren't many made. We did make a cast album. I don't know how many were pressed. But I think the going rate on the Amazon, eBay, wherever you look for that stuff, is about $65-$70 for one of those albums, because they are kind of rare. And it also ushered in a difference with the fact they used a heavy synthesizer in the pit. I think there were four musicians in the pit. And one of them was a synthesizer, which had not really been incorporated. translated very well into the New York world. And I don't think, you know, the musicians union appreciated the fact that it got rid of several other musicians by someone who played a synthesizer that made, you know, orchestra.
Right, of course. You prefigured that most happy fellow with two pianos that came along a few years later when they did an entire Frank Lesser musical, you know, with 172 keys or something like that. I can't do my math. Anywho, let's do the math of how you met Howard Crabtree.
Howard, Howard was a very well-known costumer who really got a little bit of notoriety when he was a dresser for the original company of La Cage aux Folles on Broadway. And he managed, those boys would get bored, and he would put together costumes for them to do shows to entertain each other backstage. And that's where the beautiful and most elegant evening gowns made of black plastic garbage bags came into being.
Right.
Howard was quite a genius. I was just lucky they called me up and said, we want you to come play the bitch in the theater bitch. And I said, okay.
Well, how did they know you already? Had you been doing lots of...
No, the director, Phil George, knew me. And he said, I'm going to cast you against type because I'm known as being kind of sweet, kind of. And I got to play the evil bitch theater queen, which was just fantastic. And I if they had paid me nothing, I would have been glad to do it. But they only paid me a little bit, so I did it anyway.
It was off Broadway. It was next to nothing, which is as good as nothing.
Exactly.
And so, did that change your life, being in those two Crabtree shows?
Yes. Whoop-de-doo did, by the fact that I met a whole bunch of other people, a whole other round of folks, including Mark Waldrop. I had worked with Dick Gallagher, who wrote music. But that got me the When Pigs Fly gig, which was a little more cachet, a little more press, a little better location. And that more gave me a leg up, I guess they say, than Whoop-de-doo, though I had a great time doing Whoop-de-doo.
Well, but let me ask you, you were part of that scene. I don't know, did you ever do anything or get involved with Theater in Limbo or the Ridiculous Theatricals, or were they tangential?
Yes, they were around. I work with a company still to this day off and on called Theater Tweed, which has presented some fantastic productions of, say, the all-male drag queen version of The Women at Town Hall.
Oh.
Or... works with Lipsinka or Marla Jean and the leads of things like Harry Craig or the band Seedling, Jackie Hoffman, Christine Zbornicka, other numerous talents. And, you know, that's where they'd always ask me to play the maid until recently. And the last thing I did with them was a twisted version of Picnic called Pickup. And I knew I'd reached a certain age when they asked me to play the mother.
Well, you'll always be the daughter in my heart, J. Rogers. But can I ask, it's a little bit of a prickly question, but I think fair. You're doing two fairly well-known and popular and well-reviewed and longish-running off-Broadway shows. Was there a point that you thought your career trajectory would move more towards Broadway and higher level off-Broadway rather than cabaret and going around the country and emceeing and kind of cobbling together work here and there and supplementing that with bartending?
No. I didn't have a real true expectation of what might happen because, you know, Rabbi, I wake up every day like a goose in a new world and I'm glad to see whatever that day brings. I don't know what to expect tomorrow, so I just wait and see what happens. Perhaps I'll make it to the Broadway. I know I'm a very particular type, and unless the right role comes along, it's not going to be mine. But I really had a fantastic run without the whole Broadway experience. And it may or may not happen. Who can say?
I mean, that's a terrific attitude, because I remember seeing you and thinking that you were such a particular kind of talent and had such a unique presence that you would be gobbled up, as it were, forgive the sexual connotations there, but actually that there would be a lot more things for you on that bigger level. And it was kind of a surprise to me that, you know, I haven't heard your name as much in that context. J. Just say him.
Yeah.
So if producers are listening, you know, Jay Rogers is out there and he's doing theater with Pat Sajak in Connecticut. Bring him to New York. What the hell?
From your mouth, as they say.
That's sexual connotations, too. But let me also ask, I did not know this show. I've never seen it or read it. But I heard that there was a pretty important off-Broadway show called Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens. Were you in the original of that, and what was that like?
I was in the original of that, and what was so moving about the piece, it was written by Bill Russell with music and lyrics, music by Janet Hood. And Bill Russell, as you know, went on to write Pageant and Sideshow, among other things. But the piece was about the AIDS crisis, and the device was each person who spoke, and each person had a monologue, in verse, mind you, about their life before they died. And then they'd take a seat on stage, and they represent panels on the AIDS quilt.
Wow.
The songs that were sung and were beautiful. In fact, I still sing the title song every now and then because it's very moving. Elegies for Angels, Punks, and Raging Queens. Were from the viewpoint of the survivors or people who had lived and had lost loved ones. Well, I have to tell you, it was one of the most amazing, maybe the most amazing theatrical experience I ever had. And that's saying a lot because I've had some great experiences. When you see 36 people sitting on the stage and in the end we sing the great, wonderful anthem to learning to let go so that we might forward, it still brings tears and chills to me because it was most important at the time, at the height of the AIDS crisis, and there needed a voice, and Bill gave it to us, and we spoke it with great pride and great humor and great sadness. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience.
And can I ask, since you were part of the theater community from the early 80s on, what was that decade like for you as a gay person, as a person in theater, probably losing friends right and left? I mean, what was that time like?
Well, all right, I'm going to put it out there. I thought about recently just posting on the Facebook, if someone knew me in the 80s, in the mid-80s to the early 90s, could they please remind me of what happened? I know I lived through them because I'm here and I'm healthy, but it was a terrible emotional drain just to get up in the morning. So some of us, drank a bit, did some drugs, and had a sort of a crazy lifestyle. But we got through it and passed it, and now things are good. It was very, as you might expect, perhaps you were around at that time too. It was horrifying and devastating.
I mean, I'm also a little horrified at the fact that you're a bartender and you're saying that you might... Did you become an alcoholic?
Sure.
Okay, all right.
I don't care for the label, but yes, I drank way too much. Let's put it that way. I partied really hard and quit going to funerals. That's what I did, so...
Well, that'll make you drink, I'm sure. So, but now you can have a drink, but it's not an issue, or do you have to be, like, sober for 4 years, 8 hours, 27 seconds, or something like that?
Yes. I think that it works differently for every person. For me, it was a period of sobriety where I didn't do anything, and then I realized, when you do, it's just not a problem any longer. I can have a cocktail or two, but I just don't, it doesn't have the same grasp as it used to have on me.
And were you...
Don't really drink so much, no.
And were you worried during the time that... did you have to get regularly tested for AIDS and HIV? Were you ever scared that you might have had it?
Well, yes.
Okay, well, yeah, that's what I'm asking. But you're not. You don't. You're still here, thank God. But,
that's right, and as far as I know, and I know pretty well, I'm not HIV positive, so that's a good thing.
So let me ask about a little bit about your personal life. Jay Rogers, is there a man in your life, or has there been? Or
yes.
How long are you married?
Well, not quite yet married, but we're not sure we need that. But we met my boyfriend. It sounds odd at my age to say boyfriend, my partner. We've been together 4.5 years. I had sort of known him over a long period of time. He's the other half of a group called the Lounge of Leers.
I've heard of this, yes. So is he the Lounge or the Leer?
What?
Is he the Lounge or the Leer?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know what angle you're looking for.
Touché.
We both found with gigs in New Year's Eve gigs in Key West 5 years ago, almost. Well, it'll be 5 years in January. And, it was an evening, a two-week period of really lovely weather and a full moon and something called Southern Tea Vodka. It all went uphill from there. So we had a really good time in the last 4.5 years. I'm very surprised, I have to say, because I'd sort of given up on that idea of having a partner. And now I have one. So I held out for the real thing, and the real thing came along.
Well, of course, if you need... Is he Jewish, Daggett?
Morishita is his last name.
Oh, no, I don't know. Well, I was going to offer to officiate if you ever did decide to get married, but so one of you would have to at least be circumcised for that to happen. So...
Well, okay, we both are.
All right, see, you are, between the theater and the circumcision, you're about 80% of the way there, Jay Rogers. So if you ever, I'll give you lessons, you could go all the way. You'll be a Jew in no time. I think that would be wonderful. We'd love to have you playing for our side, as it were. Now, let me ask, you're also, one of the things that you do when you're not in New York is that you're at the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center doing cabaret things. Well, it's a wonderful place for, if you don't know it, people who are listening, for playwrights to develop their plays. Theater critics go there to learn their craft, and also they have a puppet symposium or something, and they also do a thing with cabaret. How are you involved?
I went up for the last 5 years. I became a fellow to work on stuff I was working on, which they provide you a wonderful atmosphere and a place in which you can get your head together and, write your material and then perform some of it for every night. Also, during it became more than just cabaret. It became cabaret / performance. So all sorts of people come up and present their program. Everybody from Marilyn May to the Uggams to Lilias White. I can't even begin to remember everybody who's been up to show what they do when they do a one-person or solo cabaret act. It's been Jim Dale. It was incredible because not only were you working on your craft, but you were inspired by other people who were very good at it as well. And it's continuing on. I don't think I'm going this year. There's been a change of administrative type stuff, but this year the Cabaret Performance Workshop is going to be run by the delicious and nutritious John McDaniel, whom you might remember as Rosie O'Donnell's musical director when her TV show was on, and he has developed quite a following and a fan club himself. He's such a nice fellow.
Oh, wonderful. Well, this is how you...
The O'Neill is one of the prettiest places on the planet. Connecticut puts the view in colic, I tell you. It's just gorgeous here, so...
It puts the view in colic. I'll have to remember that. I'll put that into one of my sermons at some point. Now, can I ask, last question or two for Jay Rogers, who, by the way, I should remind people again, is hosting, he is emceeing the 6th annual, Metro Star Talent Challenge that starts on Monday, July 8th at the Metropolitan Room. Can I ask, who are your favorite performers in both the cabaret and the acting theater and even movie world over the years? Who are your idols? Who could you model yourself after? Who you love?
All right. We'll go back a little bit. I duly influenced by some of the older movies in the 30s and 20s, 30s, 40s. I am a huge Edward Everett Horton fan. A little, I like the second guy, not the main characters, the tertiary and secondary characters have always been sort of my inspiration. Because okay. I think playing the sidekick is the better than playing the lead, but that's just me. Singers, I'm a huge... female singers are my passion. I love Peggy Lee, Dorothy Day, Maria Muldaur, Maxine Sullivan. I'm old-fashioned, what can I say? Margaret Whiting, Julie Wilson, oh my gosh, I know her. She just is the bee's knees. I could go on because I don't want to leave anybody out, but stuff isn't just, I'm an old-fashioned girl.
Indeed, and now you're doing your show, but if we have Connecticut listeners, because the show goes all over the world via the internet, so yes, people can see you. Okay, you've got the Metro Star thing, you're doing this in Connecticut. What happens in the fall? What are your plans? Are you working on a cabaret show, a solo show with Kate Thompson? Anything going on there? What?
I've got a couple of readings that I think are really, really wonderful with parts written for me, so... I can't really say because I don't know what will happen, but they are kind of wonderful. And we'll just see that how both of those happen in the fall. And hopefully life will come from those or both, perhaps.
That would be wonderful. It has been a delight talking to the delicious, I'm stealing your word, the delicious Jay Rogers here in the
day. Well, thanks for the conversation, and it's been a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
Talk to you another time. Take care, Rabbi.